Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm John McEnroe.
I'm Bjorn Borg.
This is Martina Navratilova.
I'm Mats Wilander.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
I'm Leighton Hewitt.
I'm Andy Murray.
And you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Well, we've just seen the best tennis match that the O2 Arena has ever seen, in my opinion. Catherine Whittaker is looking at me with wide eyes at that pronouncement, because we've just seen Dominic Thiem take out Novak Djokovic in a thriller of 2 hours and 46 minutes. And Thiem is into the semi-finals for the first time in his whole life, and he collapsed on his back in celebration at the end. Matt Roberts is here, and I'm delighted to say, formerly of The Telegraph, our partners, and now of The Athletic, do you remember Charlie Eccleshare? Well, he's back. Hello, Charlie.
Hello, David. How are you doing?
So you come for your one night at the tennis, and you get that.
I know. It's like they knew. They're trying to sucker me back in. It was great. Yeah, definitely the best match I've watched at the O2.
Told you.
Yeah.
See?
Well, but I didn't see that Wawrinka-Federer one, which I would guess would be the main competitor.
The match that Matt had the great privilege of experiencing on his first ever trip to the O2.
Yeah, Murray Nadal semi-final.
2011.
Oh, I thought you were going to say the Murray Raonic, the one that went on and on and on.
Tonight's match was the longest since Murray Raonic in 2016, which was 3 hours and 38.
Yeah.
Was it?
For a three-set match.
Who was that?
Murray Raonic, 2016.
Blimey.
Which was the same year Murray played Nishikori, and that was
really
about long. 3 hours as well.
Mm. Yeah.
Wow.
And then his hip died.
Yeah.
Talking about Murray, this match was so good, I forgot to tell you that Andy Murray's on this podcast in about half an hour's time, so keep listening. Don't fast forward. This bit's good too.
We don't know that yet.
Yeah. We've got an interview with Andy Murray coming up, all right? Okay, right. So, this match was... If somebody had given me an option of the type of match I wanted to see tonight, it would be exactly what we got, because it was Dominic Thiem deciding, I've got to go red line, hell for leather, the whole match, and Novak Djokovic just saying, I'm not going anywhere. And they just went toe-to-toe for two hours, 45 minutes. Briefly to sum up the match, Djokovic won the first time on a tie break. Thiem then just, and that was after Thiem had been redlining it, and then I still don't know how they do this, he stomached that lost first set of an hour and 6 minutes, went racing off to a 3-love lead in the second set, levels the match. I can't even remember what happened in the third set. I was commentating on it and I don't remember what happened. Tell me what happened.
Well, do you remember a couple of years ago when Djokovic played Thiem, and it was almost a mirror image? Thiem won the first set on a tiebreak, and then,
won two more games.
Yeah, won two more. It was rather more one-sided from there on out. But, in that match, he failed to recover from the letdown after winning the tiebreak. So the fact that he was sort of better able to mentally regroup today after losing the tiebreak,
And we were watching it together, weren't we, Catherine? And after that first set...
Which apparently is the recipe for great tennis matches.
We were going through it, weren't we?
Yeah, do that every day.
Yeah.
This is great.
Tsitsipas,
Wawrinka.
Yes, it was tremendous. And good seats.
Yeah, we had chips.
We had chips. Tell you, it was a great night.
I never get chips. Anyway, carry on.
But we were saying...
Oh, the Prime Video runner was offering Matt refreshments.
You have a runner?
I did this evening.
Matt Roberts.
I'm not allowed to leave the studio for 14 hours a day.
On BBC Radio, if we get a fill-up of our water bottle from the tap, We're doing well. Anyway.
Didn't you think that with that team, because my mind went back to that match from 2016, it must have been, and I just thought, he's just a completely different beast, though, now.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, back then, he was the kind of player who, when he won a set against someone like Djokovic, you did suspect that might be as good as it got. Today, it was he's like, yeah, I'm here, I'm on your level, and I'm not afraid. And he really stepped up, and I thought that was just so impressive.
And that was exactly what we were saying. We said, this can go one of two ways now. He could channel his inner Dimitrov and fall away in the second set, or he can channel his inner Nadal and get stronger as...
Or more,
the match goes on.
I think,
and
more pertinently, his inner Wawrinka, because Wawrinka has that diesel-like...
take my analysis.
Make it better.
Make it better.
Yeah. See? Stan's like his big brother, isn't he?
Like, it makes sense. Yeah, and they play a similar level of... They say a similar style of tennis, and Wawrinka's been the one who's always troubled Djokovic in the slams, and you could imagine team... stepping into that role.
And he has beaten him twice. I mean, he's beaten him twice at the French Open.
Yeah.
I'd almost forgotten that, because obviously one was this year in that kind of extraordinary wind-assisted match, and then the other was when Djokovic more or less tanked in the final set. But this was even more exciting than that French Open match, just because there wasn't that sort of wind distraction.
Yeah, that French Open match on paper looked thrilling, but I don't remember... it was intriguing and weird.
It was a bit of an ordeal.
Yeah.
You know, another similarity, though, with that match, on that occasion as well, team serve for the match. And if I remember rightly, he was 40-15 up and just got broken in the blink of an eye, lost the next 4 points, having had those match points, and then won. So that kind of reminded me, tonight he went and served for the match, didn't do it. And again, you're thinking, well, that's that.
And then played the worst 3 points he'd played all match to start the final set tiebreak. A missed easy volley, a double fault, and another missed volley. And you're thinking... Oh.
He was channeling his inner Dimitrov.
But can we rewind just that little bit? Was it the penultimate point?
Of the second set.
Oh.
That was one of my...
It was so good.
It's entered my top 10 tennis moments. Live watching moments.
I mean, basically... When Djokovic is in that sort of retrieving mode, doesn't matter who you are, you have to hit more than one winner in a point. Yeah. He had to hit three winners, didn't he? I think even when he went full on backhand missile, it came back onto his toes on the baseline. And so rather than stepping back, he just swiped a half volley forehand winner down the line. And I can't remember seeing at the O2 a crowd reaction quite like it. Just a combination of joy, but utter disbelief what they were witnessing.
I've definitely never seen a Dominic Thiem reaction quite like it. He suddenly became the Incredible Hulk.
He was waving the arms.
He was stoking up the crowd. He is the most mild-mannered sort of child man you'll ever see. I mean, even by the time he was speaking to Annabelle Croft in the post-match interview, which was sort of moments after this incredibly emotional Herculean effort, he had reverted to being the sort of shy kid in the corner. It's extraordinary.
He did seem pretty pumped, though. I thought, like, he much more so than you. There are a few points at which he really let out that almost quite guttural, you know, almost like in a kind of Wawrinka kind of way. And it was great to see that, because he normally shows emotion when he's just annoyed at himself. He's one of those, I think, sets such high standards. You know, you'll see him react when he misses a shot that he thinks he should make.
God damn.
Yeah.
Catherine's first
says that.
Impersonation
says that.
Of the week. What does he say?
Can't do it again.
Just rewind on the podcast 15 seconds.
I'm going to paste it in again. The thing you were saying about how he was letting out a lot, though, that to me is part of the change here. He gets into that deciding set and he's still bringing it. And Djokovic was bringing it. That was one of the great sets of the year.
It was. And, you know, I was thinking as well, to back up that Federer win and then beat Djokovic. Would he ever have done that? Would he have beaten big three back to back? I mean, it feels like it's just so rare that anyone does that. It feels like a statement ahead of next year. Although, how often do people make statements here and then they mean absolutely again? Challenging is Dimitrov.
Yeah, statement.
Zverev.
Yeah.
But to me, his tennis felt so sustainable. Like, we've seen Thiem play flashes of the most amazing tennis you can imagine, and hitting winners galore with such power, kind of blowing people off the court. But he might sort of just do it in bursts. But he did this the whole match. He was just on it, relentlessly hitting the ball hard against Djokovic, who was his best self out there tonight. And I'm not sure we've seen that from Thiem before. Even the match against Nadal at the US Open, which was five sets, he had a couple of sets in there where his level really dropped, and that's why it was such a long match. But his level did not drop tonight.
And we talk about his best tennis as being tennis that makes you gasp, or hearing 15,000 people collectively gasp mid-rally is really quite something.
That, and that's what I remember from various matches against Wawrinka that Djokovic has had. I remember the one they had at the Australian Open, the first time that Wawrinka did what Thiem did tonight and take him on and just rip winners and take the racket out of his hand, really.
There's a video on YouTube, and it's Mats Wilander commentating, and he's just laughing in the middle of the points because of the shots Wawrinka's coming up with, and it's the same with Thiem. Yeah. We were kind of living the match through a Dominic Thiem fanatic in the row in front of us, and I think when you support Thiem, you have to be prepared for high highs and low lows, don't you? Because there's a lot of stuff that takes your breath away, and there's also a lot of stuff where you think, oh, why have you done that, Dominic?
Why
if you're
just slicing your backhand.
If you'd slightly reined it in, you'd have won that point.
And
but
and just to give an idea of how tense it was out there, I think I'm right in saying that Djokovic twice got to 2 points away from victory before Thiem held on, and then he had chance to serve for the match.
There was also that point at which would have taken him to match point when Thiem hit a forehand that was called out.
Oh, yes.
And so at that point it looked as though Djokovic had a match point. Then it was overruled, challenged, and Hawkeye showed it to be good, which is another amazing moment of tension as everyone waited.
And the other Hawkeye was on Thiem's first match point.
Oh my, I mean, that was crazy.
He thought he'd hit an ace.
And he really didn't disguise how much he wanted it to be over then, and that usually a player would do a poker face and sort of try and give off a facial expression that says, I don't need this to be in. I've got this even if I have to hit a second serve. But his face said, if this isn't in, I'm going to choke.
And he lost that point, didn't he? Yeah. Because he had to then win it on the Djokovic serve.
We all need to recreate exactly the same conditions from tonight on Thursday for Federer, Djokovic. Charlie, you have to come back. Matt and I need to sit and watch together with chips. And David, you need to be in the Five Live commentary booth.
For 2.5 hours.
Yes, very important.
Which was amazing.
But that as well is the beauty of this result. It actually sets up the rest of the tournament so much better, because now we've got a Federer-Djokovic showdown.
Knockout.
Knockout, essentially, for
that
the semis.
Brilliant.
And the world number one situation is interesting again. I can't get my head around it, but I know it's interesting.
That's how interesting it is.
Yeah.
If you can't get your head around it.
If Nadal needs to win 2 more matches now.
Oh, thank goodness Catherine's here. Nadal needs to win 2 more matches. And
yes.
World number one.
Do you think if he did win those two in the group, he would just mic drop and leave?
Yeah, it turns out my abdominal muscle is really hurting a lot, so I'll see you later.
That was splendid. There was another match today. I can't remember that one. Basically, Thiem is through. He's going to play a dead rubber now against Matteo Berrettini.
Who's out. In case anyone,
it's not going to be much of
sure
a.
That.
I mean, that. Was,
I mean, Matteo Berrettini seemed sure before it was sure, because we had him in the Prime Video studio after his match, and he was already talking about his off-season plans. So bless him.
He seems like a nice chap, doesn't he?
Delightful chap.
Yeah,
he'd really also delightful. Play 3 straight afternoon sessions, which feels like a bit of a slap in the face.
Three times on BBC TV.
Yeah, so, even an afternoon session against Federer. Like, that never happens.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes, so he's had his experience, and now he's going to go home. But he was beaten in straight sets. What was Federer like today?
I thought not that great. In all honesty, Berrettini hasn't been good, has he? I think the courts are too the courts are too quick for him. It's been quite an overwhelming experience. I mean, he's the first to admit that. I think he's loved the experience, but he's pretty overawed by the whole thing. He's looked really exposed in the movement department and on his, particularly on his backhand side, and he's talked about that, hasn't he? He said that he when he came off court against Djokovic on Sunday, he said to his team, I've got to get better, I want to get better, and they already started talking about the off season. So I don't think Berrettini was particularly good today, and Federer didn't need to be that good to beat him, and wasn't. It was an improvement in the serving department on Sunday, but not off the ground, in my view. He's going to need to get better for Thursday.
Oh.
Or he just needs all of us to be there to make sure it's a fireworks.
Right, come on, we're not going to have Charlie the next time we're on for that. So who's going to win that one, Charlie? Djokovic, Federer. Djokovic is going to take him out.
Yeah, I think he'll... Yeah, I don't think I've seen enough of Federer yet to just... I mean, Djokovic played really well today, that's the thing. Like, he lost the match, but he was at a really good level. And I think anyone else, he's winning that.
He stomped off the court, Djokovic. Yeah. He didn't even wave or anything.
How rarely in his career can he feel like he's played at his, you know, a sort of 8-9-10 match and lost? It just doesn't happen. If Djokovic plays well, he wins almost always.
What would have happened had that gone five? Nobody
knows.
That's
a really good question.
Catherine's looking at me as if to say,
the thing is,
that's
the whole match
question.
Would have a different cadence to it if both players knew that it was a best of five match. I don't think you can apply that. You can't get to the end of a best of three match and go, oh, by the way, chaps, play on for another two.
Catherine's appalled. Matt's laughing at me.
So. Well, David did that when he played me. I thought we were only playing one set and then suddenly we were playing another one.
Well, I didn't win the first one.
The comparisons to Law versus Roberts...
They weren't there tonight,
just
were they?
Keep on coming.
To two all in the first set. No.
Look, I think the facts are pretty clear on that. Federer needs to up his game considerably to even make it a contest, I think.
But equally, we were saying when those... big three play against each other, they tend to play well against each other. They do tend to up their game, even if they've been a bit scratchy earlier on in the tournament. So I do think Federer will come out playing better than he has done in his first two matches, but I agree with Charlie. I think Djokovic's level is higher at the moment.
Incidentally, the reason why the pendulum has swung so much on the year-end number one thing is that you get an undefeated bonus. He's not just lost the 200 points for... that he would have gained for this match. You also get a bonus of some points. Some points.
The necessary
some points
amount.
That would have made a difference. So it's actually really quite significant.
Right. Okay. Is there anything else anybody wants to say about tonight's epic before we get on to Andy Murray?
No.
Okay. Matt? No.
No. I mean, just that... we implore these players so often to deliver against the likes of Djokovic, Federer and Nadal, and how many times have we been pretty disappointed by a performance from one of them? So it feels right that we just laud Dominic Thiem, as we have been, for producing what he did tonight,
and
because
laud them as a competition as well tonight, because 19 out of 20 straight sets matches, and there we were. You know, it's fantastic.
All it took was me coming. do we think... I mean, obviously, let him enjoy the moment. Does that do anything for how we think he will do at Grand Slams next year? Does that, or for the field as a whole? You know, does that give them confidence, or is it just still this best of three versus best of five?
Not the field, him.
You think just him?
Yeah. I think he's agreed. A different animal.
And he's been trending upwards for so long now, and this just feels like another step, another level he's gone up tonight.
He's going to get to at least a Grand Slam semi on something other than clay next year, and I'm going to go for a Grand Slam final.
Something other than clay is grass in that conversation.
Or hardcore.
Yeah. So he's going to get to a Grand Slam semi on hardcore.
Might be grass.
I mean, Lukasz Kubot reached a Wimbledon quarter final.
Thanks for reminding me. I was like, he hasn't done it. Non-clay semi-final, has he, team?
No, his best is quarters.
Against that one against
US
Nadal, when he very nearly won.
Which is not good enough, is it?
No.
That is not good enough, Dominic.
No, but he's...
Dominic's won Indian Wells.
He was ill at the US Open this year.
He was.
He would want me to mention that, I'm sure. Yeah.
Something I hadn't really realised, and I think I put him in my semis.
But as Charlie said, his game is so much better now, and it's come on so much this year. It feels like next year's his first go at the hard court slams with his new game.
His slice backhand was working well today because it was a mixture. Djokovic didn't know what was coming next. If he got stretched out wide, he didn't panic. He got himself back in the rally and waited until he had a chance to pull the trigger.
Mm.
Catherine doesn't agree.
I just don't think it does that much.
It didn't need to. It just diffuses. It neutralizes. It keeps the rally going until he can go bang.
Yeah.
Catherine's not convinced.
I'd rather see a feet off the ground into out backhand winner where possible.
Shapovalov.
But you can't do feet off the ground single-handed backhand winners every stroke, can you?
Yeah, see Shapovalov.
So, you can try.
All right. Okay, well, there's enough highlights for Catherine to have her own personal reel of Dominic Thiem from the night. So, Andy Murray was at his Castor shopping outlet that has just opened in King's Road in Chelsea. It's launching his new clothing line.
So you want to preview tomorrow's matches?
Well, we'll do that afterwards.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, well, we're talking Andy Murray now, because Andy Murray was in attendance at this shopping outlet in King's Road, Castor, which is new clothing label, and he had his new logo on show, which was AMC.
I've been confidently saying Castore for the last 12 months. Anyone else been getting that wrong?
I thought it was Castore as well.
Okay, so maybe I've just got it wrong. If anybody knows the name...
But mine's not based on any
just complete
guesswork.
You've been in a Castore shop.
Well, you know, I think I used it first and you all copied and we were all getting it wrong, right. Probably, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, I feel like I've heard Castore.
Right.
Okay. Right. Well, we'll check that, folks. But it looks nice, the new
whatever
clothing.
It's called.
Yeah. So go and have a look at it if you want to see Andy Murray's new clothing line.
It's really nice. It's
very nice.
I hope some of it is available in sweat wicking fabrics for Andy's sake.
I'm sure it is. Anyway, he was in very jolly spirits. You can have a listen to what he said to the assembled media, of which I was one. I think, and of course, he's a new dad again, third time in 4 years. And the first question was about that. How's it all going?
Yeah, it's been good. It's just busy with we've got three kids under four now and two dogs, so got to keep an eye out all the time. But yeah, it's been good. Sleeping fine and everyone's healthy.
Do you have a name?
Teddy. Yeah.
Nice. Is that family connection or anything?
No. Middle name is when my middle name got in there, which I don't actually love the name, but my dad's middle name is Baron. His dad was Baron. My granddad's dad. So yeah, kept that. But yeah, Teddy. No, my wife liked that, so she chose it.
Is it well received by siblings?
Yeah, this time round's been really good, actually. First time when we went from one to two, there was like the first week or so was a bit, well, I don't know what it is, guess a bit of jealousy and stuff, but this time round they've been brilliant. It's been good.
One more for mixed doubles.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. I hope not. But
what onus does that put on you when you travel a lot and you've got an expanding family? How does that change the dynamic, if anything, in the last...
I guess in the last year or so, when we travelled originally with our first daughter, I guess selfishly, like, it was something that I really wanted to be around my daughter as much as possible. But actually after we went to Australia the first time with her and actually lost early there to Zverev, it was a really long trip and went home earlier than expected, and for the first sort of week, 8 days, you know, didn't particularly like seeing my daughter, like trying to wake her up in the middle of the day and she's completely out of it. Decided that like wouldn't really be doing any long haul trips anymore because it was better for them. So, you know, it's something that I have to factor in, like when I'm looking at scheduling and planning, like even for, you know, for next year, also my off season, like, you know, how much time to spend away from home there too. So it's definitely something that you know, I'm a lot more aware of now, and you know, will be factoring into any decisions that I make with regards to tennis.
Kids on tour, doesn't he? Would you consider that at some stage?
No, I mean, I think short haul, like definitely, like in and around Europe occasionally. But you know, also my daughter's at school just now, and she's really happy there. And yeah, I think it's fair to, I don't know, start pulling her around everywhere when, you know, she's happy and settled, like, at home just now. So they'll definitely come from time to time around Europe, but long haul, don't think so.
I remember you saying a few years ago one of your ambitions was to have your children seeing you play. Mm. Does that apply to Teddy as well? Does that keep you going an extra few years is that on that basis?
I don't know when we'll stop. So, yeah, I mean, I guess, like, now as well, like, after the last couple of years and stuff, it'd be nice if they did, but it's not. That isn't a priority for me. You know, I guess a lot of that stuff is kind of, you know, selfishly, I would like to watch them for me to play, but ultimately it's not actually that important. So, yeah, I mean, hopefully I can get a few more years out of my body and see what happens after that.
Did the girls watch the Antwerp final? Because they really have never really had a chance to see you, you know, being so happy winning titles in a tennis court.
I think they were having dinner at Wagamama's during the final. So yeah, I don't think they were watching. I mean, they've obviously seen me on the tennis court, like on the TV and stuff, recently over the last couple of months. But yeah, I'm not sure they've got the patience to sit and watch a tennis match.
How did your body sort of front up after that sort of big exertion of 4 weeks? And did you take complete sort of rest after Antwerp?
Yeah, I took. I didn't do anything for like 12 days. Literally nothing. Got up to my heaviest weight that I've been in my career probably as well. So yeah, my elbow was pretty sore afterwards. So I needed to take a break because of that as well. Obviously, baby came to sort of 5-6 days after we got back from Antwerp. So, but yeah, overall it was pretty good in terms of how the body felt. Just I had this problem with my elbow, which started in Asia, and it was quite an odd injury. Don't know exactly how I got it, but yeah, that seems to be getting better now.
How are you still weighing up going to Miami for the training block, or do you think that with everything going on at home, that's not something you want to do?
I think I'm going to go, but just not for that long. I think I'm going to do like 12 to 14 days there. So from like the 5th, 6th of December to like 20th of December, and then coming home and spending 5-6 days. We're actually going up to Scotland for Christmas, and then I'll head over to Australia, I think leaving on the 27th. So yeah, whereas usually I would have gone probably three to 4 weeks. Yeah, just reducing that a little bit and spend a little bit more time at home over Christmas as well, which would be nice.
How do you feel your fitness is, Andy, in terms of 5-set matches? Just sort of thinking ahead to Australia, and you're playing 5-set matches and potentially playing, you know, a number of 5-set matches in a row.
Yeah, so that's the thing. I don't know exactly how that'll be. I'm actually not worried from the hips perspective because I've had zero issues with it so far. So I don't anticipate that, you know, playing an extra 45 minutes or an hour will be bad for my hip. You know, the rest of my body, how that responds, I'll see when I'm out there. You know, my physio has always been more positive about me playing Grand Slams and playing a tournament where you play 5 days in a row. He loves the fact that there's a day off to rest and actually recover, and your body gets a chance to, you know, yeah, actually rest up before the next match, whereas sometimes, like in Antwerp, you know, where you're playing back-to-back days, sorry, there's no, you know, there's no chance to do that. So I guess I'll see how it responds when I'm over there. But also, you know, I wouldn't be anticipating that I'd be playing 7, you know, best of 5-set matches there, like maybe previously would have been my expectation.
You say you put on weight after Antwerp. Was that just by not training, or did you treat yourself or pig out or do anything particular?
So it was evenings were the issue, because when the newborn's been going to bed at like 7, he's like sleeping for like a 3-hour period, and my wife would sleep upstairs and get like a little period of like good sleep in before the baby would wake up, and I'd be on my own downstairs and just chocolate biscuits and stuff. And yeah, then there was Halloween, and I had our second daughter's birthday party was in there. Then also my sister-in-law had a birthday, so there's lots of just cake and junk and no training. It's not a good combination. I was 88 and a half kilos, and I'm normally about 84.
Was that your off season in a way?
Yes, yeah,
because so, I mean, you're pretty much going at it from here on, I suppose.
I'm going to take probably 5 or 6 days off after Davis Cup, and then I'll train. I'll probably get about 3 weeks training in. 3 weeks training in from like the beginning of December through until the 21st, 22nd, and then I'll have a little break again there. But that's something that, I'm doing quite differently, like in terms of just days off, or like a period of days off in a row, which I wouldn't have done beforehand. Certainly, I'm starting to try and do that a bit more. But because I'm doing that, I now need to watch what I'm eating a bit better.
You know, finishing off all the kids' leftovers and stuff like that?
I actually don't. The dogs normally get them.
How much are you looking forward to the Davis Cup, even though you've obviously got stuff going on at home? Is it the same feeling that you've had before other Davis Cup ties?
I'm excited and intrigued to see what it's going to be like in the new format. I'm going to miss the atmosphere, because I don't think the atmosphere is going to be the same as what it was in some of the home ties, and even, in the away ties that I played. You know, the atmospheres are tough, but they're atmospheres that you've, like, when I finished playing, like, I remember like the Belgian final, and when I played my first Davis Cup in Israel and stuff like that. So I'm going to miss that, but I love being around the team and being around all of the players, and I'm excited to see what the new format looks like, and I hope the atmosphere is brilliant. That's just my one concern about it, that I'm not sure how that's going to be, but from what I hear, we've sold a lot of tickets and we're going to have quite a decent, fan base over there. But then how does that work if we get through to this quarterfinals? Like, who has tickets for that? Like, how many people that have come over for Wednesday, Thursday, how many of them can stay? So we'll see. But it'll be interesting to see how it goes.
Last couple of things.
What's the realistic ambition target for you and the team then in the Davis Cup?
I mean, I genuinely hadn't given it any thought in terms of the group stages. I think we've got, a good chance in the groups. I think, on paper it might look like we have the strongest team, but like Kazakhstan have got two very good singles players, around 50 in the world, and play well. And then Holland have got really strong doubles, and Robin Haas, who's been struggling singles-wise this year, but he can play well. He's a really talented guy. So I think we can get through the groups if everyone performs and plays well. But it's not it's not a gimme for us, because there's some good combinations there in terms of Kazakhstan singles and Dutch doubles. So we'll need to play well to get through it.
12 months from now, Andy, what do you think you would regard as success between now and then?
I mean, I know it's probably not the answer that you'd be looking for, but I would want to be healthy. That's what I would want. And, I think over the last 6 months or so, definitely, last 6 to 9 months, you realise what really is important, and the reason, you remember why I started playing tennis in the first place and what the reasons for that were. And I played tennis when I was a kid through and obviously all my professional career, and I played it because I really love tennis and I really enjoyed playing, and being healthy allows me to do that. And it's nice being able to win big competitions and having a high ranking and stuff, that's great. But actually, the reason why I'm playing is because I love it, and I need to try and remember that. So if I'm 30 in the world or 70 in the world, like, if I'm still enjoying it and I'm enjoying the preparations and the training and all of that stuff, and I feel competitive, then, you know, that would be success for me. But I need to remember that. Sometimes it's difficult, you know, when you start playing, competing and losing matches, and, you know, you really, you know, you want to do better. So that would be success if I could stay healthy and hopefully stay on the court.
That's the role in China and Asia, right, giving you the confidence that you can play to a consistently high level, or is it still kind of day-to-day thing
as it was before?
I think that I can. I think my body showed that I'm going to be able to do that. That I'll be able to play at a high level. So that's where I need to be smart with, like, my scheduling and the amount of tournaments that I play, and also, like, being a little bit, you know, the beginning of the year reactive in terms of, like, you know, if I plan on playing three tournaments, let's say, in the first couple of months of the year, but I only win one match in each of the tournaments, well, then I could add a tournament. But if I end up doing really well, then maybe I'd play a tournament less, which in the past I wouldn't have done that. I would have, like, had my schedule, and it would have been like, right, I have to play in Indian Wells and Miami because that's what the tour says, and, you know, they're mandatory events and you must play them. Whereas I'm not going to be looking at my schedule and my tournament year like that at all anymore. I'll do it quite differently.
I just think I'm kind of this game again.
That's a subject close to my heart. was it liberating to live like a normal person, or did it make you fear retirement and think, oh God, this could be my life after tennis when I'm not driven? When you're just sitting there.
You'll probably kill me for saying this, but we'd always say that I don't want to end up what happened with Ivan. I know if you put that in your papers, I know I'll get a message from him tomorrow. But yeah, because he was obviously, when he was playing, he was, you know, in great shape and very thin. And then obviously when he stopped, you know, things went south. So yeah, need to avoid that.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. JD Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For JD Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
This edition of the Tennis Podcast is sponsored by Tennis Channel, and Tennis Channel Plus is the place to watch the French Open. They've got every court live, and you can watch on your phone or your smart TV, both in HD. Matt, this sounds like your kind of thing.
Yeah, there's nothing I like more than watching multiple courts with matches everywhere, dipping in to where there's the latest final set tiebreak or even the latest bit of aggro.
And David, don't worry, you can just watch your favourite court, Suzanne Longlen, all day if you want. But whatever you choose, the French Open promises unforgettable moments and new chapters in tennis history.
Do you know, I think in a lot of ways, the French Open is now my favourite slam. It's the strategy of the clay court tennis, the way it challenges players, and particularly now with legends of the game up against a new generation of young players. I cannot wait.
Be there when it happens, with daily live coverage beginning on Monday, May the 20th. Subscribe to Tennis Channel Plus to stream daily coverage of Roland Garros. Use promo code TENNISPOD20 for 20% off your annual subscription.
So there's Andy Murray talking to us a lot in the shop. Nobody got any free stuff. But
and that's why we failed to clarify exactly how to pronounce the name of the brand.
We just don't know. He sounds in good spirits, doesn't he? Don't you think?
He sounded really chirpy, and it's all looking good. I still can't really believe it. The idea of him still being a professional tennis player. Like, it's just mad, isn't it? When you actually stop and think about that Bautista Agut match, and I mean, he had his own farewell celebration.
He went to his own funeral. Sake.
Yeah.
He did, yeah. Oh dear, that is amazing. How do you? I asked him about the success story, didn't I? About 12 months from now, what would success be, and what do you think success would be for Andy Murray? Take away that obviously, yes, he wants to be healthy. I totally get that from his perspective. What do you realistically think we're going to be looking at from Andy Murray in 12 months' time, fitness permitting?
I think, yeah, it is. So, looking at the slams, I think if next year he got a quarter final, that would be a really fantastic result. I think anything beyond that is optimistic. It's not impossible because it's Andy Murray, but to me that seems about the level that I would imagine.
I found it absolutely fascinating the way he said his trainer, Matt Little, thinks that he will be better suited now to Grand Slams than he would to tour events because he's playing every other day rather than every day. So the best of five set element is less of a concern than the everyday element.
And how amazing to hear him use the words, "I'm not concerned about the hip," as he did in that little discussion. You know, he's confident that the hip will hold. It's getting his strength back, getting all the other factors of his fitness back that is the bit of the unknown. But to hear him say those words, where he's probably not stopped thinking about the hip for 3 years, the fact that it's no longer even a consideration, really, when he steps on court, is completely remarkable.
I'm still slightly concerned about things like the elbow and stuff like that. That how much wear of tear on the rest of the body.
Those compensatory injuries.
How it's going to cope. We won't know that, of course, until he starts playing, but. Oh, it's nice seeing him looking just such good spirits and looking forwards. And now, yeah, he's got his documentary coming out, which will chronicle exactly what he's been through. But basically, he is a proper tennis player again.
I mean, what would par beat the Australian Open? Third round? I mean, obviously, it depends a lot on his draw, because he'll be unseeded. Yeah. But you couldn't really be disappointed, could you? I mean,
I think it's
really difficult with him. It's all about the draw. It's such a cop-out, isn't it?
If we looked at his draw and we ended up just going, that's not too bad.
Like I would Matt be, did in Antwerp.
I would be disappointed if he didn't make the second week. Mm.
Yeah, I agree. With a good win behind him, I'd say fourth round.
Yeah. If he plays Novak Djokovic in the first round.
Yeah, I mean.
That is possible, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's going to be unseeded, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'd give him a free pass if he lost that one.
Particularly after that practice match last year.
Yeah, that was what did for him last year.
You know, that one you witnessed. Oh, dear, that was so sombre.
It was hideous.
It's
horrible for Djokovic as well.
Yeah,
I think
weird situation.
I think that's an interesting counterfactual, though, because I think if he hadn't played, I think the only thing that forced him to go so public with everything that was going on was because he played that practice match and everyone had seen it. He was able to hide all of that.
And
that's
a uniquely Australian Open thing, isn't it?
No,
that they advertise these practice matches,
It is one of the great unknowns of this year, why he agreed to do that match, that practice match, in my opinion.
Bizarre.
It was so public.
Don't you think it's classic Murray, though? Almost just flogging himself publicly just to find out where I am. You know, I'm not going to just do it against any old person.
I think possibly his subconscious was telling him that he needed a reality check.
Yeah,
well, that's what I want. And almost like you just need to come out and
hit rock bottom before you can
just go public.
Resurface.
With this stuff.
See what I did there?
Exactly.
Pretty I good. Should come up with documentary names.
I also really liked Murray's attitude to the Davis Cup in that clip we just heard. How many people we've heard completely writing it off before it's even started, and Murray, with such a wise voice, is saying that there are concerns about it, but I'm really excited to play it. I want to give it a chance. And I thought that was really quite refreshing, and thank goodness Murray's back to say smart things like that.
Yeah, it's very 20 19, isn't it, that everyone just feels compelled to pick a lane and commit to it stridently with imperfect knowledge.
I've checked on the ticket sales, by the way, after, because he was wondering what happens after the group phases, and they've said that, you know, that there will be tickets put aside for the nations that actually get through, so that they have their chance to get some. And as things stand, the semi-finals and final are selling well over 75% at the moment, which is not bad, is it?
So that's pleasing.
You know, so hopefully it will be a really good crowd in Madrid. The other talking point that we didn't get a chance to cover last night, because we were on air at the time on the Tennis Podcast when Rafael Nadal came into his press conference, was the exchange he had with Ubaldo Scanagatta, the Italian journalist, who...
Do you miss Ubaldo Scanagatta, Charlie?
he was...
Is there an Ubaldo Scanagatta in football?
Don't think there's quite an equivalent.
No. Well,
one of a kind.
In the last of the English language questions, Ubaldo, who is somebody who has this long-winded way of asking questions, and he goes all sorts of different routes and never completely sure which way he's going to go, but does end up often getting quite interesting answers almost in spite of himself, but he does. There's often answers that we end up using. He said something, I didn't quite understand it, but he was kind of questioning whether Nadal's poor performance might be due to being distracted by having got married last week. And Ubaldo got jumped on social media, because Rafael Nadal's reaction was to call it a bullshit question. Yeah. And let's
we go
move,
to Spanish now.
Let's move
it's
on
bullshit
to Spanish.
Question.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Well, just from a journalistic perspective, Charlie, I saw Stu Fraser from The Times actually said, you know, he thought it was a perfectly legitimate question. What did you think?
It's one of those, I mean, if I were thinking about asking that question, I would be very wary, and I would think there's a decent chance I'm going to get shut down here. He might have thought there's a chance I'll get a good answer, and if I do, then that's a really good story. It can feel a bit inappropriate or whatever. I just kind of think you can ask the question, but then it's also fair enough for Nadal to slap it down. Yeah. Like, I kind of, in a way, I just think we don't even have to make anyone the bad guy. It's just he's asked a question and he's got a response and kind of move on. And, you know, I don't really know what he was expecting Nadal to say. You know, like, yes, you're right, I was dropping it short because distracted by my... Also,
I married my girlfriend of 15
yeah,
years.
Yeah, also, like, and my wife is here, but, like, I would say, like, for me, the admin of getting married beforehand was far more distracting. Like,
I could understand. Like, Rafa did
I don't imagine he was, like, slaving over seating plans and flowers, but, like, you know, wedmin is stressful and time-consuming. Getting married in the aftermath, not so much.
He just showed up in a suit.
Wedmin is a new word for me. I'm learning all sorts. What do you both think?
I think it was a bullshit question. I think that sometimes bullshit questions get good quotes. So, a lot of journalists are prepared to take the hit of, you know, getting a chastening response in order to get the good quotes, and sometimes we're very grateful for that, aren't we? And that's great. But I do think it was a bullshit question.
I mean, I personally didn't particularly like the question, but I don't really have a problem with him asking it. Like you say, as long as he's prepared to get slapped down, I think it's perfectly fair enough what Nadal did, and I'm quite pleased he did it as well, because it was quite entertaining. And all's fair as long as you take it on the chin, which Ubaldo incidentally didn't.
He does do those slap downs really well, Nadal, doesn't he?
False.
That, this year.
Yeah, that was
coming to his own.
Oh yeah, because he was asked if he'd said like son of a bitch, and he was like me, I swear. So good.
Yes. If Kyrgios trained as hard as you, what? No. Yeah. If. Meaningless.
Right.
And then, of course, the horrifying admission that he doesn't like cheese.
Yeah, well, that's an
it's been a big year for Nadal press conference
totally
moments.
Unacceptable. Okay, well, so very quickly then, the preview of tomorrow. What have we got tomorrow? I don't even know who's playing.
Medvedev Nadal.
Oh, well, right. Okay, who's winning that?
I would say Medvedev.
I'm going to say Medvedev.
Matt's got his head in his hands. Matt, you can go on to the next one if you like. Who's that? Zverev against Tsitsipas.
Oh, I mean, they're both tough to call tomorrow, I think.
Yeah.
We don't do...
Can I predict Team Berrettini instead?
Can I... I mean, Tsitsipas got a really good record against Zverev. He seems to cause him trouble, so I think I might go Tsitsipas.
I'm going Zverev and Medvedev. Yeah.
I think Tsitsipas, yeah. Tsitsipas and Medvedev.
Zverev and Medvedev.
Okay, you and me.
I'm gonna give a nod to Nadal.
So does that mean we've all
gone different combos?
No, I think Dave and I have gone the same.
What?
Yeah.
That doesn't happen.
So hang on, we've all got Nadal apart from Matt crashing out of the tournament tomorrow.
Correct. Right.
False.
By the way,
no one will know this, but Charlie did the eyebrow as well. Deserves a mention.
He did. Well, we got to get a picture of that. Final point. I've found out you are right about boomers, Catherine. I'm not one. 1946 to 1964.
Yeah, it's a baby boomer.
Yeah, it's not me.
That's not an Urban Dictionary thing. That phrase has been around literally since 1946.
Well, a big thank you to Sherry Nashif, who has sent me a link with all sorts of contextual phrases that I didn't understand.
You're in the... So... I'm a millennial.
I'm Generation X.
You're
Catherine.
Yeah, the one before that.
The Resolution Foundation think tank defines Gen X as those born between 1966 and 1980. They grew up in a time when technology was advancing fast, but it wasn't nearly as readily available as it is today. Because of this, the generation straddles both the digital and non-digital world and understands the importance of both. I am, therefore, resourceful, logical, and a good problem solver.
People are tuning out.
Hang on, so everybody born between the years, 1964 and 1980?
66 and 80, yeah.
Is a resourceful and a good problem solver.
That's me. Find out where you are, folks. It's what it's all about. Okay, Charlie, well, it's been lovely to have you with us on the Tennis Podcast.
Lovely to be here.
And how's it going at The Athletic?
It's going very well, thank you, yeah. I'm into my, I think, seventh week, and, very much enjoying it.
Good man. Well, we love reading your stuff. We love hearing you on the Tennis Podcast. Thank you very much for joining us. Catherine and Matt will be back tomorrow. We are brought to you in association with The Telegraph, executive produced by tennisballs.com. Our mascot is Rio with a Y. We'll be back tomorrow where Catherine and Matt will have sat together eating chips, watching matches. That's all that's ever going to happen here at the O2 Arena because that's how we get classics. We'll see you tomorrow.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.